All right. You heard the goddamn music. That ain't our regular theme music. That there's the Gem Hunt October theme music. Because we have officially entered the ultimate month for all things whore. You may also be wondering, why the fuck all is there a new episode already? Didn't these dumb shits release an episode last week? I done thought it was supposed to come out every other week. Well, I'll explain that later. But first, you are tuned in to Gem Hunt, our Satan-loving family horror podcast, where we, the dogs who are getting dirtier by the day, select a movie with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb. We watch that fucker, we get out on the mics, talk our shit, and then vote to decide whether we hunted ourselves a whore gem or dug up a stank turd out of the cat box. My name is Cody, and I'm the best, man. I did it.
I'm Buggy, and if I had boobs, I'd kill myself.
God damn it. Never mind. I remembered I have a different one.
Oh, wait. Is that yours?
No. There was a little discussion beforehand about not stepping on each other's dicks.
I forgot.
Not you. I'm Beth, and my son is not the devil.
Yes, he is, and his name is Tony.
Wait, which, my actual son?
Yes.
His name is Tony.
His name is Albert.
Okay, as noted moments ago, it is October, or it will be when this episode comes out, and we're releasing this episode a week earlier than normal, just to make sure we are kicking whore month off on the right foot. Speaking of feet, my feet feel weird all the time, and I'm going to have them removed, or maybe replaced with horse cocks.
Cool. Or get acupuncture. I know I can make you an appointment online now. With the person I know who's great at...
I don't know. This horse cock plan.
Yeah.
I'm rocking with it.
What do I look like? A money tree?
You have medical insurance that actually pays.
He's got horse cock money, though.
He does have horse cock money.
That's what they tell me. So I won't get into details right now, but we'll have a little October preview for you a bit later. Our bathroom project is a never-ending nightmare, so we've been bathing in our own shit and piss.
Oh, no, but we do have a bathtub that's connected to a drain now.
Yeah, that's where I pee and shit.
It is brand new, pristine, never been shit in.
Yeah.
So you think. Anything else? Anybody watch anything recently? Got any other topics to get off your chest here before we move on?
We haven't watched anything horror, but we've been watching Foxy Noxy.
Oh, yeah. The Amanda Knox show.
It's good.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's kind of a horror movie.
We've been too busy. Well, I can't wait to see one...
Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
No, I've seen that. One battle after another?
One battle after another.
Can't wait to see that. Haven't done it yet. We've been outside. It's still nice here.
Yes, one letter after a number.
Touch some grass, guys.
Well, the good news is, despite not watching a lot recently, we have something to discuss tonight, which we did watch. Which is a film called Fear No Evil, which was my selection. This movie was released in 1981, directed by Frank LaLoggia, written by Frank LaLoggia, starring Stefan Ångrem as Andrew, Elizabeth Hoffman as Margaret, a.k.a. Mikhail. Elizabeth Hoffman made her film debut at the age of 54 in this film.
Oh, in this film?
Yes.
Wow. And she's the one that's from Oregon, too.
Oregon.
Corvallis or something.
Yes. Kathleen Rowe McAllen played Julie, a.k.a. Gabrielle. John Holland played Father Damon, a.k.a. Raphael. Daniel Eden as Tony. Frank Bierney as Father Daly. Some other people. Don't matter. The composer was also Frank LaLoggia, along with David Spear, not to be confused with David Spade.
I was gonna say Burning Spear, but yeah.
The cinematographer was Fred Gooditch. Where can you watch this fucker? Prime Video for renting, Plex for free, Fossum for free, Fandango at Home for renting, and Tubi for free. And there are Blu-rays out there. We watched a Blu-ray, we rented that from Movie Madness. So what is this steaming pile of jizz-slathered horse shit about?
Dude,
well, let me tell ya. This movie begins with some narration that to me sounds like a bunch of religious mumbo-jumbo about archangels or some shit. And as a non-religious person, I couldn't make heads or tails of it, but I think it's probably important to our storyline, notably that one of the archangels, Raphael, is the one narrating this opening monologue, explaining that he's about to engage in battle with Lucifer to stop his rebirth. We then cut to an old priest named Father Thomas Damon, navigating a little rowboat toward a creepy castle on an island just offshore of a small town, on his way to battle Lucifer, with an old magical religious artifact that looks a bit like a cross with a shield on it, so he must be Raphael, I reckon. Father Damon enters the castle, encounters some dead dogs and maybe a zombie woman, and then starts the chase to catch Lucifer, who is prancing around shirtless in the castle. After getting cornered against a tree, Lucifer does some shape-shifting and announces that he will be reborn before Father Damon impales him with the religious artifact. So yay, evil has been vanquished. Mm-hmm. But wait. Cut to a family gathering in upstate New York in 1963, which is leading up to a baptism for a little baby. The baptism goes off the rails almost immediately, with blood splattering around the church, an indication that something just ain't right. We get an interesting sequence with a house slowly devolving before our eyes, with dialogue playing over it between a mother and a father discussing their child, who seems to be causing a rift in the home. And then we get a title card telling us that it is 18 years later. Thus begins the story of poor old Andrew, the problematic child now in high school, who is probably the reincarnation of Lucifer. An important detail about Andrew, he doesn't seem to be fully aware that he is Lucifer reborn. However, he's beginning to discover his powers, which manifest in very unique ways. For example, the bullies at this high school, who are a hybrid of punk rockers and characters from Grease, target Andrew because he's such an offbeat, effeminate, possibly gay loner. And at one point, the main bully, Tony, attempts to make out with Andrew in the shower along with a bunch of naked dudes. Never seen that move from a bully before.
No.
And as a result of this homoerotic attack, Andrew can't control his dark powers and nearly sucks the life from Tony during his makeout session. Along the way, we also follow the archangels that are alluded to in the opening monologue, who are plotting to stop the rebirth of Lucifer. We have Margaret, the reincarnation of Mikhail, and sister of Father Damon, aka Raphael, and Julie, the reincarnation of Gabriel. Julie is a classmate of Andrew and frankly doesn't seem to know what the fuck is going on in this film. Mm-mm. Andrew does appear in her dreams. Who knows what's going on with that? Throughout the movie, we get a lot of batshit craziness, including death by dodgeball, a man suddenly growing tits, the unexpected appearance of zombies, a church-sponsored play featuring a crucifixion that surprisingly becomes a real crucifixion, and some very unfortunate dog deaths. We also have a somewhat confusing sub-subplot involving Andrew's parents, which we'll try to get into a bit later. Amidst the madness, we wait to see whether the archangels can summon the power of the Lord to stop Andrew from fully realizing his homosexual tendencies and completing his transformation into Lucifer. Does any of this make sense? I'm not so sure, but we're going to talk about it. Did I miss anything in the plot?
I think that's a pretty good way to cover it because it's definitely all over the place.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, for sure.
For sure.
Nice work.
Okay, so Fear No Evil is the directorial debut of Frank LaLoggia, who was 23 at the time. He played a key role in nearly every aspect of this film, including raising a large chunk of money that went towards the film's small $1.5 million budget. Notably, Fear No Evil won the Saturn Award for Best Low-Budget Film at the 9th Saturn Awards in 1982. What is the Saturn Awards? I don't know. You also may know Frank LaLoggia from his 1988 film Lady in White. Well, not perfect, it did traumatize a generation of children who happened to stumble upon that film at some point. So, okay, let's get going here. Back to Fear No Evil. So as you may have surmised from the recap, this film is crazy and confusing, and one thing that we noted after watching it is that the film feels like two different movies smashed together. So let's talk about that a bit, because after doing some reading, It seems that many critics had a similar reaction, and there may be some explanation as to why. Okay, what was your initial reaction to this in terms of this feeling kind of like it was a couple different movies?
Definitely that. It had different, like, tone and pacing. It was like a high school movie like Carrie or even Grease, as you noted. I think I read somebody calling them the low-rent pink ladies. They literally had pink satin jackets. So, yeah, Carrie and Grease meets The Omen. But, and yeah, it was like a satanic, demonic possession, but also like a, you know, high school bully drama, which those two things obviously can go together, but it did feel like patchworked kind of. What do you think, Bubs?
Yeah, I guess I didn't really like look at it at the time like it's two different like movies in one, but I did definitely feel like there's a lot of things going on that are just kind of sandwiched together that don't like not necessarily feel like they don't need to be there, but don't feel like they're in the same like world necessarily all the time or like fit together like linear. You know, like, I don't know. There's just like some kind of like confusing timelines, as we noted. And just like, I kind of think it's interesting that they expanded so much on all these different things, but it did kind of make the movie like drag almost in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of felt after my first watch, felt like it was sort of a religious battle against Satan and evil, kind of like The Exorcist or The Omen. The Omen gets brought up a lot, but it's also kind of like a teen gore fest zombie attack film. But then it also has this kind of weird supernatural thing, kind of like Carrie. It's almost like more than two films smashed together.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, they're fucking zombies.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot.
I mean, it's really
an understatement. That's, I saw, obviously, the word camp thrown around a lot in things I read about it. And yeah, there were some scenes that were so campy, they were fucking fantastic.
Yeah, there were, like, fun. I just can't tell, like, if it is camp, because I don't know if... Like,
if it's intentional.
If it's intentional, but either way, it still is fierce. I enjoyed it.
Well, here's an interesting quote from a review site called We Are Cursed to Live in Interesting Times. They say, it's a Frankenstein's monster kind of movie, and I genuinely cannot say with any confidence if that reflects ambition or incompetence on the part of the filmmaker. It doesn't seem like anyone on set is aware of what a weird film they're making.
So, yeah, I saw the word amateurish. Somewhere, and it was like, oh, which also, I don't want to correct you, but I think he was 26 when he made this movie, not 23.
Fuck.
I double checked the birth date and when it came out. So, but still, young first movie. So it really might come down to like actual lack of. He went on to make The Lady in White, which people like, which I haven't seen.
Me neither.
But it really might be a like, we're making a horror movie. This is what you do. You know? Right.
I didn't really like Maybe. Notice.
Yeah.
Like it being amateur necessarily.
Well,
either.
I mean, yeah, it.
From,
I
like,
guess
that critique.
That's a word I read, which wasn't a word that came to mind for me. To me, it just seemed like one of those kitchen sink movies.
Yeah, that's how I kind of felt about it too.
Yeah, it kind of maybe comes down to the writing and the acting, because technically it's sound. It looks great.
The film,
you know,
is good. Yeah, yeah. The quality of like. Technical quality. Yeah.
The effects are kind of campy, but they
in
make
a
them work.
Fun way, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I've heard that some of the actors, since they were working with such a low budget and not a lot of planning or experience, they were just kind of like plucking random people off the streets, essentially. Like,
funny.
One of the bullies in the shower scene literally was recruited from the soccer team because the actor that was supposed to be in that scene dropped out at the last minute. There's a scene with the janitor in the film, and it was actually the janitor at the high school. Nice. So there's kind of shit like that along the way, and probably a lot of amateur actors that they got just
but
to film.
Do you guys think acting wasn't what... I mean, the acting
It was a little clunky.
It was, but I guess in that fun way, that certainly wasn't like the sticking point for me, because the material's so fucking ridiculous that like if someone was giving like the best performance, you wouldn't know.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think, that, you know, for the people they plucked off the street, they did a damn good job.
Yeah.
So,
or a funny job.
Yeah. We talked about the zombie element of this, which kind of comes out of nowhere. and feels kind of tacked on. So I got clued into a little bit about this from a blog called Fantastic Movie Musings, which said the zombie scenes seem unnecessary, but given the fact that they were forced upon the director, that may be why, and noted that this was actually a trivia detail on IMDb, which I hadn't dug into yet, so I looked at that. And apparently, producer Charles M. LaLoggia insisted on having zombies in the film since zombie movies were popular at the time.
And this is a good place
so
to...
So his own brother
his cousin.
Or whatever, cousin.
It's his cousin.
Yeah. His own cousin forced him into putting zombies in the movie.
Which, what I read about that cousin, too, is so where this movie came from was his cousin stumbled upon one of the main locations on it, which is this actual castle in, I don't know if it's upstate New York, someplace called
it is, yeah.
Alexandria Bay, New York. So his cousin found this place called Bolt Castle and then was like, hey, cousin, write a horror movie. This is a great place for a horror movie. So I thought that was kind of a fun.
Indeed.
Fun detail.
And then apparently Avco Embassy Pictures picked up the film for release solely based on the fact that zombies were featured in the film.
Okay, so it was right. The cousin was right.
Yes.
Yes, you're
and
right.
They kind of used the zombie angle to market it in the beginning, which probably led people astray.
Oh, quite
astray.
Yeah, but
they were kind
That's
of
fun.
Confused.
That's funny to be like, we're going to a zombie movie and be like, there's dead dogs and like gay
Wait,
shit and
there's
like,
a lot I do not know
a lot of like domestic there's domestic violence yeah
yes indeed so the other thing kind of on this topic of the way the movie feels and the kind of convoluted hard to follow elements of it, what I was thinking of when we were watching it was it almost gave me a feeling of watching like a Euro horror film like Fulci or Jean Rollin, although they kind of suck you in with the dreamy nightmare quality of their films more so than this did. But the kind of wacky, nonsensical flow of this thing did remind me a bit of that. And it could have been, you know, there's some atmosphere and the locations are cool and some wacky scenes involving creative gore that all kind of lends itself to being a little bit Fulci-esque or maybe Jean Rollin-esque.
Yes, maybe the American take on that would be like clunkier and trashier because Americans are clunkier and trashier than Europeans.
Right.
It's like the McDonald's version or something.
Yeah, but I don't think he wasn't influenced by those films. In fact, apparently noted in his audio commentary on the 2003 DVD release, he was influenced by the Hammer classic and Douglas Slocum, who was a cinematographer operating between the 40s up to 1989, who did Indiana Jones films, Jesus Christ Superstar, and The Fearless Vampire Killers, just to name a few.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
No direct influence of Fulci or Jean Rollin that I could find. So that could have just been a coincidence.
Did you think about those movies at all while you were watching it?
No, I mean, I did. I would say like the zombie. I feel like the zombie scene in particular did kind of remind me of a lot of like Euro horror movies that also just incorporate zombies where like teenagers are making out.
Yeah.
Because that actually happens like a lot of times.
Right. They're just like in the cemetery and then suddenly.
Yeah. And like particularly a lot of Fulci films too. There's a lot of people getting mutilated in weird ways due to zombie stuff like making out in cars and then also just doing, you know, various activities. There's usually zombies in some like aesthetic cool area. So that reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah, the scenes. I mean, the location, maybe that alone. Yeah, it was very cool.
Multiple writers noted the locations and the atmosphere and the cinematography as being kind of eye-catching and adding a lot to this, where some of the other elements maybe were lacking. Okay, we talked about Bolt Castle. Let's get gay, or maybe homophobic, or maybe somewhere in between. So as mentioned, Andrew's character may be gay, but it's never explicitly stated. So to open this discussion, here's a quick note from Queerty, a movie review site, and the article about the film. It says, there's something intriguing about making the most famous evil figure that ever existed a very unstable, queer-coded figure. But it's never clear what the movie's intentions are by doing that. Is it a critique about social outcasts and the cruelty of teenagerdom? Is it a homophobic portrayal that tries to other sexually deviant people even further? Is it neither of those, and the character was just an unfortunate mix of acting choices, directing, and lack of proper storytelling? Maybe a little bit of all three? So with that as kind of a conversation starter, how did you feel about sort of the weird gay-coded stuff, the homoeroticism that pops up, and what this film might be saying about those things, if it's saying anything at all?
I don't know. I do think it's kind of complicated, and a part of me wonders if, like, the way I view it is just through, like, my modern lens of, you know, like, how I would interpret things. A part of me thinks it's just sort of, like, intentionally, like, I think playing off of Tony's character, who's like very aggressive and super like evil.
He's like the lead bully. Yeah,
yeah. And him also like mentioning to like in a joke and we're like, oh, do you want to make out, Andrew? And then like making out with him. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if that was like intended to sort of like stick it to Tony. I don't know if it was like supposed to be like something deeper. Cause I don't necessarily think they portrayed Andrew is fully a queer character, because there was also some weird kind of sexual undertones with him and Julie.
He raped her.
Yeah, like there was some, so more than weird, because I don't know. I didn't like see if that's what happened. I just remember him like doing some really gross stuff, and then she woke up with scratches on her back, which is not cool.
So he assaulted her at least.
He violated her. That much is clear. So I don't know. Like, it's kind of hard for me to like think about, you know, like what is really the goal here? Because Andrew's obviously not a good person. Tony's not a good person.
He's Lucifer.
Well, yeah, no shit. But you know what I'm saying? Like, objectively, like, I don't know if it's trying to make a greater positive statement or a negative statement. It kind of just feels like there. But I don't know. What do you think?
It was really hard for me to not react to stick it to Tony. And also, I think you said deeper, like, right after that. I'm really behaving.
Really? I didn't even notice that. That's crazy.
But perfect. I think what you said is exactly... I think it's like we're saying about everything else, this movie doesn't even know what it is.
Yeah, it's like kind of how I feel, because a part of me like wants to be like, maybe it's deeper than that. Maybe it's like attacking Tony's fragile masculinity,
right?
You know, as a whole.
Or I wondered if maybe, well, I wondered if the director was maybe a gay man, or if the lead actor was, and they, but there's something we'll talk about later with the music, and it's very kind of rooted in like late punk, early new wave, which there's a lot of like fucking with gender and sexuality, but there's also a lot of homophobia. So yeah. I'm like, it could.
And the scene with Tony having boobs as well. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And then stabbing his own boobs. And he stabbed himself because of having boobs, and also kissing Andrew again.
Yeah. I think maybe it lands on it didn't even know.
Right. I don't know. Like, have people commented on that, like, in particular?
Yeah, like, is there, like, where it lands?
You know, there are thoughts either way.
Right.
So just to talk about the shower scene just for a moment, which somehow seems kind of homophobic and then also homoerotic simultaneously, which...
And making fun of homophobia. You know, it's like... That too.
But then also like being kind of, it's weird.
It's, yeah.
It's, right.
It's like all at once.
Hey, Tony. Andrew sure is sexy. Oh, yeah. I just love his hair. Hey, so what are you doing tonight, honey? I bet he's booked for weeks. Hey, you hear me, man? I asked you what you were doing tonight. Yeah. Well, so if you're not a... You're gonna give me a date tonight, won't you at least let me have a kiss, huh?
Yeah.
Come on.
Go ahead, Tony.
Come on, man. Give me a kiss, man.
Go ahead, Tony.
Come on.
Tony.
a couple interesting details. Apparently, it was very awkward to film that scene.
I fucking bet, dog.
Well, you know, not just because of the scene, but because it was one of the first scenes shot, and none of the actors in the scene had met each other or even knew each other
and
yet.
And it was like 1979 when they filmed it or something, and they had to suck face.
And apparently, the hot water hadn't been turned on yet because it was before the start of the school year at the school they were shooting at.
That's probably good for boners.
Apparently, it was cold as fuck.
That might be good for boners, though.
Yeah, it could be good for boners, just in case. You never know.
It'll improve the boners.
It'll improve your boner. No, but really, like, if you did happen to be like, uh-oh, I'm turned on, it's like, well, it's so cold.
You're saved.
Right? That's how it works, right? That's my limited knowledge.
I don't know. That's why I walk around with an ice pack when I watch these movies. So that Queerty article suggests...
I'm sorry, Bobby.
That's okay. So that Queerty article suggests that the scene directly inspired A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, and it goes on to say, it's actually quite shocking to see such a blatant display of a gay kiss, even if, within this context, it's literal act of the devil. It's two young men kissing, surrounded by other naked young men. The winky hints of erotic undertones that were replicated in Freddy's Revenge become overt here, even if the weight of the moment had no further meaningful repercussions on the plot or identity of the character.
See,
so that's one take on it.
Yeah, that was making me wonder if there were someone gay in... If there was...
I know there's a gay person involved with this.
Like poking fun, you know?
Yes.
It seemed like maybe there's just like one little wedge of like, all right, you know, let's make some dudes kiss. I don't know.
And then after a very brief review, queerhorror.com stated that obviously this is not a homo-positive movie.
Yeah,
so
right.
That's how they felt about it. And then, you know, there we kind of talked about the weird scene with Tony suddenly developing tits during a second makeout session with Andrew towards the climax of the film. And
climax.
You know, that was such a devastating moment for him that he stabbed himself. It almost looked like he was going to stab his own dick off, but then he just went with the stomach or the heart or whatever. Yeah,
the tits.
Yeah, he fucking Elliot Smith'd himself.
He did. Yeah, it was strange. It's just hard because I don't want to tell people how to feel because it's just kind of confusing.
Yeah, maybe
in
that's
general.
How does it make you feel? It's like a Rorschach test.
Yeah, like
I don't know.
It feels wrong, but like also I don't know. I'm confused.
I mean, there is the long running standard Hollywood trope of villains being coded gay.
Yeah.
And he is the ultimate villain and he's coded as gay.
Yeah.
So maybe
Yeah. And especially kind of the way he, at the end when he's close to his transformation, like the acting and the mannerisms the attire.
Yeah.
I heard somebody refer to him almost as a drag queen.
Yeah,
at the end.
Some glam. Yeah. But then I was thinking it's also like, okay, again, back to the music. That's like big fashion then. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
True.
It's punk. It's, you know.
I think, but satanic. It's important where it is like because of who the character is.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of is like telling about like probably their intentions, you know?
Yeah. But or it could have been an acting. Again,
Rorschach. I don't know.
Acting choice.
Acting
you know?
Choice.
Like he might have been a homophobe.
You never know, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one last thing, and I didn't know where to put this, so I'm plugging it in here. The Exorcist was one of the most shocking movies ever made at the time of its release, but as transgressive as it was, there were lines even it did not dare to cross. For example, you never got to see Satan's Wang.
Yep.
But where Friedkin dared not to tread, Frank LaLoggia and Fear No Evil boldly stake their claim. Fear No Evil is a movie that not only is brave enough to combine supernatural horror with some elements of Grease, but also is unafraid to depict Lucifer's junk on screen for the world to see at last.
Was his junk there?
I think there definitely are cocks. Maybe you see Andrew's cock at some point.
I mean, if that person says it,
I didn't see Andrew's cock. I don't
gotta
know. Gotta
rewind. Be kind. Rewind.
I gotta rewind and see her.
Why you shouldn't watch movies on your phone? Sometimes they don't show up.
read me the film. Clock it. That was crazy. Damn. How did you know? That's even scarier.
Yeah, how did you know she watched it on her phone?
I just thought you watched them all on your phone.
Do you? I didn't know that.
Not all of them.
She has a laptop.
Yeah.
Oh. Who doesn't?
There's a projector and a TV with a DVD player in his house.
All right. So I feel like that conversation kind of leads into the next conversation a little bit. The religious mumbo jumbo in this film. So let's talk about that, because this film is dripping with religious context and history. But taking a step back, I was unclear if this film was supposed to be pro-religion or if it's just one of those cliche details of the era where the embodiment of evil is often Satan and the forces of good are inherently having God on their side to fight evil, which does pop up not just in this era, but in a lot of horror films, maybe not so much these days, but it was a thing during the late 70s and early 80s, I think. Do you think this was a pro-religious film?
I think it's the same thing as the gay stuff.
Yeah,
it really is two sides of the same coin. And I mean, I know that the director has, like, he's an Italian-American who now lives in Italy again, which makes me think maybe he's Catholic, which is a weird thing to say, but I mean, it's, you know, odds are maybe.
I did read that he had like a Italian-American Catholic upbringing.
Yeah, or so again, maybe he's fucking gay. This is my take on everything. Raised Catholic, gay.
Fucking gay.
Oh.
Fucking gay. You should make that a soundbite.
Gay fucking.
So you can use that like against all the time.
Me. Oh yeah, I'm gonna get a little sampler.
Fucking gay.
No, but I mean, same deal. It's like, was there a message? Was it one or the other?
I don't know. I think with that one, it is just sort of depicting like religious good and evil. Like it's not necessarily right. Like, this is the true good, but it is like in this movie, this is the true good.
And Lucifer's being bullied in school, and the kids who are, I guess, Julie, who's a classmate who ends up being one of the archangels, is good.
Yeah, she doesn't bully anybody.
She's not a bully, but I'm like, Lucifer's getting bullied.
Like, it's confusing. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's just like any movie that sort of explores, like, in particular, possession and like Christianity or Catholicism as a whole, where it's just like, I mean, that's just kind of what you do, you know? But I don't know if this is a subliminal message to like be pro God. I think that's very interesting, like a very interesting choice, especially considering the context and what is in this movie too.
Yes, it's definitely sacrilegious, you know, the play the students put on, the crucifixion. Oh, ends yeah. With the student playing Jesus getting not only like the stigmata, but then like electrocuted.
No, he got murked.
And then everybody in the audience and then there's this kind of weird juxtaposition. I remember where Andrew's doing his like satanic rites. I think it's like the same or right after or at the same time as the play is going on. I can't remember if they're flashing back and forth.
I think they are cutting it because the zombies are kind of released during this point in the film.
So, I mean, it's definitely, the imagery is fully sacrilegious.
Right. And also, there's just, like, some stuff that happens in the movie that's just, like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Be a crazy, like, pro-Jesus film.
Oh, so it might be, like, again, just throwing everything
at
the wall.
And there is that whole scene, too, where they depict the religious figures, too. Like, it looks like The Last Supper to me, but it can't be.
Yeah.
Or maybe it is.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
So Mondo Digital describes it as a cross between The Omen, Carrie, Rock and Roll High School, and a Christian scare film, which I thought was interesting.
I see the Rock and Roll High School. Because the soundtrack is so, like, it's obviously not all one band, but it added an element. Well, it added an element to it that maybe just made you think.
Confusion.
What?
Confusion.
Well, confusion, but also, like, whatever was going on, you're like, if this is the music, then it's probably trying to do something cool. You know what I mean? Not that I'm a huge fan of any of those bands anymore.
Well, who knows what the deal with the religious shit in this is, but it should be noted that it was on the Satanic Panic section at Movie Madness, which feels appropriate.
Right. Yeah.
Enough of that Jesus bullshit. I have a note here to try and discuss Andrew's parents. And at least one review I read said maybe more than that. They mentioned the fact that Andrew's parents play a strange role in this film. They pop up here and there, but their connection to the storyline is pretty superficial. What the fuck is the deal with them, man? Especially his dad.
And again, this is about how the movie is confusing. Because of the way the baptism plays out, there's another woman who we... Actually, that is something that got left out. There's a woman in like an attic or something.
That's his mom.
His mom that got hurt in a some kind of weird accident.
Oh, when the iron fell on her head?
Yeah.
I guess so,
that
yeah.
was her.
Oh, she just looks different. Okay, so never mind. Yeah. I thought... Because at the beginning, there's two women at the baptism. And I thought maybe... The people who end up taking him after all the weird shit happens were not his actual parents.
I don't know, because I just remember him, like the dad, talking about how the baby kept him up all night last night. Like,
yeah,
he
but
was
they
talking
took
about that.
Him after the baptism.
No, but that was before the baptism.
Okay. Well, anyway, the dad is a domestic abuser.
Well, he's also been talking. He talks about after the baptism how the baby ruins everyone's life.
Long, Marion. How much longer are we going to allow him to run our lives? You listen to me, Mary. I want you now. I want you for me again. I can't take this.
You must be insane putting your needs above his.
Can't you see it? Why, he's pitting us against each other. He's out to destroy every ounce of love we ever felt for one another. Marion, sweetheart, don't let him do this to us.
And it seems like they're trying to depict that maybe Andrew is why, like, he's making them act evil. But the dad, like, the mom slaps the dad first, and then he hits the shit out of her, and then an iron falls on her head.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, spoiler alert, her role ends with the dad fucking murdering her.
Yeah, he kills her because he, like, loses his shit. Yeah.
And, I mean, the scene where the dad yells, "My son is the devil," in the bar is pretty worth it.
My son is the devil.
Your son. My son. Last night he asked me, "Dad, could I take the car? I want to take my girlfriend to the movies. I want to be a good guy. I let him take my 79 Grand Prix. He took it to Spencer Speedway, dragging with the car, and totaled the whole thing.
His son's the devil.
Take a tip from me. Don't let him get you down. Next time he asks, tell him to go to hell. After all, you're his father. Wasn't it for you, that little pecker wouldn't be here anyway.
My son's the devil. My son's a devil!
He's definitely kind of bounces back and forth from being this friend of Margaret, but also this drunk piece of shit. It's kind of confusing.
Margaret, who's one of the archangels.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. They seem to know each other.
I feel like a lot of explain. There's so much in this
there's
movie
like
that
a
we
lot
have to be like,
happening.
Yes, exactly.
As I've said.
They're neighbors.
Neighbors.
I read that. And I think maybe she's even at the... Well, she wouldn't be the same actress. I think there's flashbacks where they've known each other the whole time. The dad, is like kind of like a working man yokel type. I don't even know.
The postman?
I thought he was the postman.
He's the yokelman.
He's the yokel postman.
I forget things. Yeah, I don't know. The parents were weird, but I think maybe the intent was this kid is like a cancer or something.
Yeah.
Is he in my butthole?
Oh, he was in
the
your...
The devil is in your butthole.
And that's homoerotic.
Mm-hmm. Is it, though?
Well, I don't know.
I think you've got some problems.
Projecting.
Yeah, I think you're projecting.
Anyways, yeah, the parents play a weird role that kind of confuses things. But they are there, and we had to at least talk about them for a moment because I didn't really cover a lot of it in the recap. So that's that. Okay, dead dogs. Warning, this movie has dead dogs in it.
I feel like we maybe should have put I don't know. You know, there's a whole website, does a dog die?
True.
Well, listen to this whole thing before you watch the movie. How about that? Because then you'll find out about the dogs.
Well, so a dog dies. There are dead dogs.
Well, there's
hanging
at the very,
dead dogs
at the very beginning. Yeah.
And they look real. And then a dog dies, and it looks very fucking real. The dog is not murdered in the movie, but we were watching it, and I was like, that is an actual, there, that is a real dead dog. And Cody was like, no, it's not. And I'm like, this is 1981. That is a real dead dog. This movie did not have the kind of budget to, like, make a dog look that real and dead. And then I found out that they purchased dead dogs from the local humane society. So they're real dead dogs, which it is not a thing I'm super into.
Not just not super into. You're like, you're partial.
I like my dogs alive. No, it really, it for me might actually be kind of a deal. Like if this was the best movie in the world, I don't know if a real, well, now it's like we've moved past, you don't need to do, and again, it's that thing with dead animals in movies. You don't need to do that.
But they were already dead. Like, that's the only reason why I feel like a little differently about it.
But it's like 1981, that dog might have just been euthanized for like overcrowding.
Right. I know I already said this, but do you like pink flamingos?
It's a chicken.
But that's relative to your opinion.
People eat. I prepare chicken people for people eat dogs at work.
Sometimes, I prepare I dog think. For people at
you
work.
You do not.
In
do
the
not.
Office I work
I do
in.
Not. And I know it's cultural, so I'm not trying to be. But I'm saying,
is
like.
It? I thought it was just like probably someone had.
I don't eat chicken. I work in a place where I serve chicken to people.
I don't eat chicken, motherfucker. I sell it.
That's right. People kill chickens. And chickens kill people, and that is the cycle. No, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it's different to me. And that's wrong. You're right. Like,
I mean, that's like, that's fair. I get it. But it's also to me, I guess I think it's unpleasant. I don't like it. I'm not here to be
pro.
Like, I'm pro use of euthanized dog in film, but which is horrible. Soundbite that, please don't. But I just, it makes me feel a little better to know that like they didn't kill dogs.
Well, of
in order
yes,
to
they
make
did not
this happen.
Kill dogs. And, but the weird thing was what it said. At the end, you know how you get nowadays the like ASPCA thing or like no animals were harmed. It said all animals on this film were under the care of veterinarian. What I'm like, fuck.
Oh, that is kind of ominous because.
Yeah.
Like,
So part when I saw that, I was like, they might have euthanized that dog for them. It's Superman that hoe. They no, I'm done. I just don't like it.
Yeah, I get
That's
it.
Fair.
It's a like we all have our things. Like,
I don't think anyone was forcing
it.
You to be into dead dogs. I don't remember anyone
that
making
wasn't
that
the,
argument.
Like, the sell of the film was that you have to like it.
It
or,
should
or
be
the dead dogs.
You know how we all have our things though that you can't like. You don't like teeth getting smashed.
Yeah, but that won't stop me. I won't let that stop me from living my life.
She'll watch a movie where somebody's teeth get smashed and she will talk about it.
I will talk about that movie even if I hated it.
Yeah
Well, it should be noted the reason there's a dead dog in the first place is because Satanic Andrew drinks the dog's blood because he's gay. I mean, because he's Lucifer.
Yeah. Oh, see, he doesn't like that.
Alberto.
All right, well, enough dead dogs. Let's do a quick chat about the soundtrack, because it's pretty interesting. As we noted, it gets a little punk rock. There are songs on the soundtrack from the Sex Pistols, the Ramones, the Talking Heads, Richard Hell. Anybody else that I'm forgetting?
Patti Smith, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And I don't know, from what I could tell, there was no connection between this film and the New York punk scene. Or anything like that. So
it was filmed in New York.
Yeah, but I mean, you know.
Like actors or.
Yeah, it didn't seem like, you know, usually when there's these kind of 80s films with some kind of punk connection, it's lauded and all the writing about them and whatnot. So.
Right. Nobody from the bands like showed. It wasn't like, and, you know, Richard Hell played.
Right, or like the director didn't have like a connection to like.
He's from New York City, though, I think.
But did
I'm just saying, like, maybe he was like somebody who I didn't read anything about it either, though, but maybe he was. I mean, because you got to get the rights to those songs,
that's
right?
True.
Yeah. And I heard that that was actually one of the last things that happened after they had secured a little bit more funding for this film is that they managed to get some cool music to put in it, which a lot of it's right at the start of the film. So it kind of gets you going like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a badass punk rock film. And then it kind of gets a little off the rails as we go on. And then the score by La Loggia is quite strange because it gets really melodramatic. Like the scenes with the archangels and whatnot is, it's almost like daytime made for TV movie score. It's overly dramatic, I think. It's very strange contrast.
Did you say he was in a Jesus Christ Superstar?
He was inspired by the cinematographer. I don't know about the music. Okay,
so yeah. Because I'm like
inspired by the music of Jesus Christ Superstar.
I've seen that. Have you seen it? Like, kind I've seen of, it live. Like, have you look, seen the play?
It's fun.
I wrote it.
It's fun.
Have you gone to see it? Like,
I haven't gone to see it in person, but it is fun.
Yeah, I saw it in like small community theater. It was pretty fun.
I bet it was fun.
Yeah, if you like Jesus, I mean, if you like punk rock, there's a little bit of punk rock in this for you to whet your appetite for the chaos that happens later. Okay, that was the end of my prepared statements. Is there anything I'm forgetting that we didn't talk about yet? No, I'm hearing no's.
No.
The control booth says no. Okay. So I think that means we have done our big one on this movie.
Yeah.
Big.
And that means we have to do some business. So first up is our obscurity rating. IMDb votes on this fuckface 1928. That's 1,928. IMDb critics 34. Rotten Tomatoes review 12. This is available 5 places online that I could find, including free and for rent. And as I mentioned, there is a Blu-ray available if you have a movie store or you like to buy confusing movies, which gets us to a fat 6 on this,
which is 1/3 of the number of the beast.
That's true. Okay, let's do the thing that we do where we vote.
I'm scared.
On whether this is a turd or a gem. And I will count to 3, and then we shall unveil our votes. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Oh,
ladies and gentlemen, we've done it.
We have Has this ever happened?
Yes.
We have made a turd.
Triple turd.
We made a turd.
We have 100% thumbs down across the board as this, unfortunately, has been rated by the Jam Hunt podcast as a turd. Does anyone want to offer their thoughts and feelings?
It hurts, you know? This turd kind of hurts.
Turding hurts.
I guess because...
Most of mine do.
No, yeah. No.
Right. But it kind of sucks because I do feel like there were parts of this film that did have potential that I don't want to, like, completely shit on. Mm-hmm. But...
To keep on theme.
To keep on theme, of course. But I also just... don't think I'd watch this ever again or really recommend it. But there's just always a little soft spot in my heart for a little place in my heart for people who put, you know, try out new things and like work with what they have. Like, I always commend that.
Yeah, same. I think I would watch clips of this. Like, there were some scenes that were so fucking ridiculous and fun. I really might have even... not said it was a turd except for the dogs, because I'm not going to recommend it to anyone because of the dogs.
We know.
I know you know, but it all of it together, like if it was the best movie ever, I would give a like a trigger warning or caveat or something. But man, there were some scenes and ridiculous, like I voting it all the way down, I was kind of like, it's wild. Like, what are you looking for in a horror movie? If you're looking for wild, like, it's wild.
Yeah. It is.
It's wild.
Indeed.
It's not good.
No.
No.
I don't, like, regret seeing it or anything, but it just wasn't, like...
No, I'm going to yell, my son is the devil, or not the devil, for the rest of my life, probably.
If I get any boobs, I will stab myself.
So. No comments.
Well, I like me a batshit, crazy, nonsensical horror movie from time to time, and there were definitely elements of this film that I enjoyed, but it was so uneven that I found myself being never fully invested in the storyline. Especially when you're following the Archangels, there's this tonal shift that just doesn't work for me. Everything from the music and the pacing and the way it's shot, I just found myself thinking, come on, let's get back to the crazy shit, you know? Enough of this. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes back to the idea that this film feels like two different movies a lot of the time, but not in a good way. Which is disappointing because I think there are films that can pull the rug out from under you and it ends up being a pleasant surprise. I think of Barbarian just off the top of my head, yeah, where you think you're going one way and it ends up being a completely different movie. You've and you're like, that, right? Yay, it's still awesome, even though it's not the movie I was expecting. But this was kind of like, what movie is this? And could you just give me something cohesive because I'm losing it here. But I did like the spooky sets and the atmosphere and the gore. Which we didn't even talk about the dodgeball death that much.
Oh,
which,
so my good. God. See, that's the kind of stuff. Awesome. The shower scene, too. About that.
No, but also the gym teacher being so aggro about dodgeball was like, I wrote that in my notes.
Yeah.
Not only did I write full on boy kiss, but I wrote something about the freaking dodgeball game. I said, the weirdest, most intense dodgeball game ever. Gym teacher is freaked out, and I mean literally, like, he's freaked out.
Yeah.
No, like, he's a freak.
Did you guys still play dodgeball when you were in high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Deadly, if someone died.
At your high school?
No. Yeah, someone did die. Someone died from dodgeball.
Too real.
So, yeah, anyways. I mean, some of the special effects were cheesy in a fun way, but not enough to carry it. I heard that they actually used like cornflakes like pasted together for the zombies. Makeup, which
electrocuting
I think is kind of funny.
Jesus is pretty bad.
Cool. Yeah, That's why it's hard. There's some cool shit.
You know, I'd say that you could Google some clips of this on YouTube and get what you need to get. Look up Fear No Evil dodgeball scene and you'll get your boner that way and you don't have to see the dead dog.
You don't.
But, you know, at the end of it, I felt like this movie wanted to say something, but kind of ultimately wasn't saying anything, which was a problem for me.
I'm going to email the director and ask if he's gay.
I think you should.
That's a thing you're allowed to do now, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really appropriate question
to ask.
In
these times, too, when there's like no anything scary associated with...
Off rip.
I'm going to ask him when I see him at the bathhouse.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Well, that was that. Now it's time for special time!
Special time!
And all I want to do here is a real quick preview of October, because I love October. So as you know, here at the Dirt Dog household, we like to go all out in October. I put together a schedule of at least 31 films with the goal of watching one every night or more if possible. So here's just a quick preview of like the first 5 nights of October for us. Night 1, October 1st, we have Head of the Family, 1996. That's going to be an odd thing. October 2nd, we have a film called Porno from 2019, and it's not a pornography film.
Okay.
October 3rd, a found footage film from 2007 called Exhibit A. October 4th, we have Buggy's Gem Hunt movie. Do you want to announce your Gem Hunt movie here this evening?
I don't know.
Do you remember
what it is? I actually don't know how to pronounce the name.
Nadja.
Nadja?
Okay. It's just like Nadja.
Nadja? Yeah. I found this like cool, trippy, like modern vampire movie from the 90s that I think is directed by David Lynch, or at least like partially, like he's definitely involved like in its production.
He's not listed as the director.
No.
But he is in it, apparently.
He is in it. He's there.
I used to have it on VHS when I was in high school.
I think that's interesting. It was on my list for a while. I thought it might be cool. It might be a different deviate.
Heck yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I've never seen it, so I'm excited to check that out.
Stasha Kinski is in it.
Sunday, October 5th. I believe October 5th is a Sunday. We're going to watch Humongous from 1982.
But we're also going to see Elvira at the Clinton Street Theater.
Oh, yeah. So we got a little double feature. That we're going to try to pull off there. So that's a quick preview. I did want to note also later in the month, we're going to do a Children of the Corn marathon with the first three films in the franchise, because somehow I've never seen any of these. Have you seen any of them?
You haven't seen any of them?
I've seen the first one, I think.
The first one's so fun.
But also, you are the most corn adult.
You're the most Children of the Corn person I've ever met, and yet you embody yes. that movie.
You're a corn man.
I have eaten a lot of corn this summer.
That's how you become a child of the corn.
Yes, and now I'm an adult of the corn, and I like to chomp corn. So I'm going to post our list on our webpage and probably on our social medias if I can figure out how to do it. But if you can track down our IMDb page or our Letterboxd, where I think we're at gemhunt_podcast@Letterboxd. I don't know how these things work. You can find the full list of the films there. Or if you know us, you can just ask us what we're watching when you see us walking down the street. We might end up doing some actual screenings. As Beth noted, we're going to Elvira, so who knows what will happen with the schedule. We'll either ship things or do double features or whatnot. And we're hoping to put out a little bit more content than usual, if we could pull it off, with maybe weekly recaps of what we've watched. Very short, not full episodes, except for the two movies we have scheduled for our Gem Hunt episodes during the month. And the last two Octobers got derailed by trauma and tragedy, so I'm hoping we pull this one off, and you never know what might happen, but I will say, if there's anyone out there having family problems, I feel bad for you, son.
I got, what are they, though, then? What are the other 90? Okay, bye.
They're all family problems.
Signing off.
I got 99 problems, and family is all of them. Just kidding, not me.
Wow, what a diss.
Mink. I love my family.
I'm telling everybody.
My family's what you said. My family is perfect.
Damn, Mom!
I'm kidding. I realized how it sounded.
Okay, happy October. See you soon.
See y'all later.
Uh-oh.
See, I'm the best, man. I did it.
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt. We'll be right back.